Well, there's been a lot of big deal made about the year 2000, and I think the first thing to recognize is that, you know, there are lots of different calendars. I just picked up the encyclopedia, and you know that we're on the Gregorian calendar, which was sort of figured out by Pope Gregory in the 1580s. I mean, based on that, there is such a thing as a church calendar. We have Advent coming eventually and things like that. So we have a church calendar, which we go by in most of our liturgical churches. The Hebrew calendar. The Islamic calendar begins with Muhammad's flight from Mecca to Medina. And then there's the Chinese calendar. If you've ever eaten at a Chinese restaurant where they have this placemat, you know, you try to figure your year, it gets very complicated, but the year of the dog or the year or something like that. So first of all, what is the year 2000? I mean, as far as calendars, it depends on whose calendar you're using. Obviously, the Western world sort of dominates calendars, but calendars are based on observations originally of the planetary or heavenly body movements. I mean, like from solar calendars or lunar calendars. I think you know that like our Easter is sort of based on, what is it, the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox. So our Easter is variable in terms of based on when the full moon comes. So these are very, very ancient things. So the idea, first of all, a calendar is a human construct that is put into trying to block off time during people's lifespan. But when you think now about geologic time, that's a whole other story. I mean, we're talking about time that makes sense to us as human beings, and we're using that kind of convenient thing for us. But as far as the universe is concerned, as far as the history of the Earth is concerned, that's a much longer period. The other thing, from the viewpoint of the Christian church particularly, we date ahead our calendar BC and AD. Now a geologist will say BP, before the present, because that avoids going over trying to figure out so many years BC. And of course in non-Christian areas, they will use BP more often or something to that effect. Well, when you get into when was Christ born, if we're going by beginning time, and if you go by like the Matthew story or something, and they're supposed to be the stars, if you take them seriously, or planetary positions or something, the star that the wise man saw, okay, what was it? And so astronomers have seen there was a conjunction of planets or something. It might have been a nova, a new star. I once wrote a article for Church Periodical on this or something. But none of them exactly do you start with zero or do you start with one? So most scholars who look at calendars figure that Christ was born in maybe 2 or 3 B.C., something like that.
4 B.C.
So, you know, making this big deal about the year 2000. And one more thing. There is a big deal being made about it. We read from Ephesus this evening, I mean, from Ephesians. Well, if you go to Ephesus, as some of you are planning to do, when I was there 2 years ago, on top of this big hill overlooking the ruins of the city is a huge sign. This is the reputed home of Mary, where John the Apostle is supposed to have taken Mary to her home. And there's a big sign there saying that there will be a big gathering celebrating the 2000th anniversary in the year 2000 of Jesus Christ, or the birth of Jesus Christ. And the sign is in several languages. So probably a lot of people are going to gather in Ephesus, not on New Year's Eve, it was sometime in the summer or something. So there are big celebrations made about 2000, the year 2000. But, you know, each year is a gift of grace, and to me, I say big deal, 2000, you know.
Well, that takes care of that.
Comments or response to Evelyn here before we get going on Elmer? I've got some, but I'll save them for later. Okay, Elmer.
I don't have that much to say. Evelyn comes at it scientifically, and I come at it from David Letterman. At least five things, I can't get up to 10, that are not going to happen by the year 2000. By the year 2000, Oakland Village will not have telephones in every room. By the year 2000, the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod will not ordain women. By the year 2000, the ELCA will not stop talking about sexuality. By the year 2000, the Roman Catholic Church will not permit priests to marry. And now, that's what I can't use, but because it has to do with Princess Diana, I don't want to bring that up. I guess I feel Evelyn is at the end. I'm trying to figure out why all this hubbub about that. My life has much more to do with my own lifespan. I mean, I'm worrying about how long it will be, but I'm wondering how much time I have left to do some things that I want to do. And I don't know, I think that's Christian, for sure, but I think it's probably also very Lutheran. Isn't that the old story that Luther said, if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, what would you do? He said he'd find a tree. So I'm pretty much into what I'm going to do in the lecture tomorrow at 6:30, 6:20, or next week's session, or the conference after that. I don't know, maybe the question to me is it going to be a bunch of Christians doing all this, or will this be people who are outside of the Christian faith mainly running around trying to figure out what 2000 is going to be different, if it's going to be different? I guess I have the feeling that, and that may be absolutely untrue, that this will be just, how do you define that?
No big deal.
Well, no big deal, but that the people interested in it will be people who aren't too rooted in anything that gives them perspective about life. Does that sound too proud? Or?
Well, it's not premillennial, I'll say that.
Right. Well, that's...
China.
I'd like to show you what Bishop George Anderson had to say about this.
Okay.
I heard him speak at our East Central Wisconsin Senate meeting about a month ago. It was held at the Timber Rattlers Ball Stadium in Appleton. He's quite a baseball fan, so he stood on the baseball field. Mm. Home plate. This is where Christ was born. The year 500 is over in first base, and he enumerated all the things that happened to the church in a period of persecution. Then he marched from there up to second base out of the year 1000. That's where the Roman Catholic and the Eastern Orthodox Church split, and that's about the time of the Crusades. And he marched over to third base. That's the Reformation. He told about what happened there. From third base, here's the history of the Lutheran Church. All the problems that occurred, and he said, the Lord protected our church through all the 2,000 years. We can be assured that the Lord will take care of us in the next, beyond the year 2000.
I'm not going to argue with the president of the church. Comments, I've got some things, but there's a substantial number of Christians who would beg to differ on this particular one, and it's a school sometimes called the premillennial school, and it has to do with one of the most important elements in the church, or in religious life, is deciding, you know, when the end times will come. Because you find this very much in the New Testament. You can make out a very strong case that Paul was anticipating that the end times would come very soon. And one reason one shouldn't get married, you know, was that it wouldn't make any difference anyway because the end times were almost there. So why bother with it? But they're developed especially on the basis of the book of Revelation. There's where we go. The book of Revelation, the idea of the millennium, when you find it in Revelation 21:6. 20:1-6, okay, not 21, but 26, where they talk about the fact that the signs tell that at a given moment, Jesus will no longer tolerate the growing evil, corruption, all these war, pestilence, famine, all these things in the world, and that Jesus will come back and will engage Satan in a battle for control of this world. And what many people, to get to the, and then there will be the Battle of Armageddon, which will last for 7 years, and Satan will be cast into jail, and then Jesus will reign bodily on earth for 1,000 years. Jesus, you see, is going to come back twice. Jesus will reign bodily on earth for 1,000 years. And so the way I, you know, the lamb will lay down with the lion, and the way I like to put it, the big fish won't eat the little fish. There will be a time of perfect equilibrium where everybody who's here and now will simply be where they are, and there will be a time of peace and love and all these things. Then will become the time when Satan will be loosed once more. There'll be one final battle, and then we'll have the great white throne scene from when the, you know, Jesus will come to judge. I still like the quick and the dead rather than the living and the dead, but I guess we have to call it the living and the dead now. All right. Now, the point here with premillennialism is that they try to interpret, you know, when this will be. And they argue that there will be a fixed time when Jesus will no longer accept the fact that the world should be continuing in its, you know, in its evil ways. And what many people have done from way, way back, you know, go back even into the Old Testament times, is try to interpret when this will take place. And they base their particular, what we call eschatology, or their doctrine of the last days, on this. And some have gotten into things like Jehovah's Witness, which is very strong on this, and they even bring in the pyramids and all sorts of other interpretations. People are fascinated, like, by this, because I think the bottom line here is that Jesus will answer, or Jesus, just to play the devil's advocate, I suppose you could say, or maybe that's the wrong phrase, but anyway, Jesus will live up to his promises. If Jesus says, I'm going to come again, then that's what's going to happen. And that, therefore, we should be ready to look at the scriptures to see when that's going to take place. And you know the phrase, you know not when it'll come like a thief in the night. But they will say, how long do we have to wait? You know, how long, O Lord, how long? And their argument is that one can be reasonably sure when the forces of evil have come to triumph, you know, in this world, in this life. And they would say, if you can't make out a case for the forces of evil triumphing in this world by the late 1990s, that's about as bad, I suppose you could say, or about as convincing that that's ever going to be. And myself, I think about this. When you think of some of the disasters and the things that are taking place, there's not really a whole lot to be optimistic about in terms of the you know, the goodwill and peace and understanding and all these nice things that we like in life to, you know, to have happen to us. I gave you, for instance, the whole matter of drugs. When I grew up, the worst worry my parents had about me was that I was going to drink 3-2 beer. And I was told by my uncle when he caught me drinking 3-2 beer along with some other friends at the Goodhue County Fair over at Zambroda behind the dairy barn, we were drinking beer, that we were going to go straight to hell. And Uncle Carl made that very vivid, that 3-2 beer was it. And now if you're raising teenagers and the worst thing they do is drink 3-2 beer, that's a Minnesota phrase, by the way, you might not know the rest of, that's as much of beer as you can put in to sell it at a certain venue. But anyway, if that's the only problem you have, you know, you're pretty lucky. But you think of the thing with drugs. You think of what happened with AIDS and the devastation that that's created and the epidemics around the world. And with crime, you go down the world, who's to say that some of these things, you know, aren't done by some sort of demonic force that at work, and that to come to the point here that, how do I say this, that in order to demonstrate the power of right over wrong, of righteousness over evil and all the rest, it will take a dramatic, bold, you know, event or occurrence. That it won't be sort of a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but there will be there will come a sweeping time when there will be what's that wonderful phrase, that wonderful hymn? I wish, when the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, this I wish we had it in our hymnal just as a demonstration of this sort of thing, and that there will be no mistaking when it takes place. That we won't have committee meetings and decide, well, maybe the kingdom will come, maybe it won't, and we better have some more study on this, or send another factual presidential fact-finding blue chip committee back to see if the kingdom is coming or not. If we're going to live up to the promises that Jesus has made to us, especially in the book of Revelation, then we should be assured that it's going to happen. And why shouldn't it happen at a very bold, dramatic moment like this?
But if you look at the whole of Scripture through Revelation, you're going to end up there. And that's pretty un-Lutheran to do, isn't it? And so I think our Lutheran voice has to be out of the grace of God, and especially the kingdom of God that is here now, among us.
But God's ways and our ways are not God's ways.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why.
That's why when we figure out that it's going to come cataclysmically, which is our way, I think, we want to wipe it out. That's the way we do it. We get guns and we bomb people. We drop all that other stuff, and God will do it a whole different way. I don't know what way, but I'm sure no one else knows what way it either. And I'm going to hang on to the grace of God that's already here and at work among us. I think the communist era was viewed by premillennialists as worse than anything that ever happened any place. Remember? Do you remember those publications?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah. I knew a seminary guy had a gun under his pillow. Because he didn't trust the seminarians and profs around him. We're going to shoot them all. No, that's bad. There's a lot of other stuff that's bad, too. But I think it could get worse, and I think maybe it could get better. Strangely enough, by God. In either case, I'd say by God.
So the world ends as we know it, or, you know, like, if the kingdom comes. Or if it doesn't, I should say, will people that think that the year 2000 is it, will they be disappointed? I mean, I look very forward to, you know, what will happen, but I also feel like I have a really rich life ahead of me, and I want to experience so much. So I certainly won't be disappointed if I live beyond the year 2000.
Well, there are cults.
Will people be disappointed? Like, well,
there are cults now who are getting ready for it. Heaven's Gate, clear example
but
of
when the year 2000 is over, when December 31st, year 2000, we're moving into 2001, and we make it, and it continues, will people, like, kill themselves?
No, they'll just be a mistake. It'll be next year or the year after.
Yeah, will they continue?
Well, that business about the computers and the getting them readjusted, yeah.
But, you know, will these people be so devastated that it didn't end, and, you know, we're still here on Earth, that...
Well, there's been
a
long record of groups that have been expecting the last times. There's a group called the Millerites in and around Boston in 1842. And they were ready, and they sold their property, and they went up to the highest hill around Boston and waited. And this is the forerunner, really, of Jehovah's Witness, of course, we know it. And they even, you know, they thought they were going to go to heaven, and they didn't know what heaven was like, so they wanted to be ready, so they put on sheets. You know, that's in a way it's funny, in a way it's kind of tragic, right? Yeah. And then, you know, when they found out they weren't lifted up or raptured, as we call it, then, you know, back to the drawing board to see if they could find out some things. And then they would say that they misunderstood. They would say that it wasn't God's problem, but it was our problem because we didn't understand the signals. And this has a tremendous appeal for some mm-hmm. people. Koresh with the Branch Davidians and Waco, that was the whole strength of the whole thing, that a prophet has come among us that knew it, right, at this point, right, and that people were willing to follow. What's his name down in Guyana? The people's
Jim Jones.
Jim Jones, right. And you say, well, that's only a few people. We think there's something like 3,000 cults in this country, and some of them are harmless. Some of them have to do with supporting the Chicago Cubs. You know, they sit out in left field with too much Budweiser, and they, you know, the men go men go topless, and they have four guys, CUBS. Or you go to the Packers, and it's 20 below, and they'll have seven guys, you know, with a Wisconsin's favorite, and that's a cult. And UFO cults are cults. The one down in Roswell, New Mexico. There's a story in the Christian Monitor again today about that one. Some people need this, and they aren't going to be taken in by the rest of these things. And then some people already are making a huge party out of it. There's a group called the Millennial Institute, and there are 6,000 of them, and they're hiring various luxury liners like the Queen Elizabeth II and the rest. They're going to sail from New York to Alexandria, and then they're going to get on transportation, and they're going to go down to the pyramids and be ready for it there. Some people know that January 1, 2000 is going to happen first in the Pacific Islands, and they've got their itinerary planned, and they're going to follow it all the way around, right?
Now, did you establish before you started, you came in a little late, where the year 2000 is because of...
No, she talked about the confusion.
Yeah, she talked about it, but I mean, it could have happened already.
It's possible.
Yeah, sure. That's
possible. 1996, 4 years.
Yeah. if you're, if you're starting from the birth of Christ, I mean, wait till that Christian calendar, then, you know, we might be in the year 2002.
The other piece, I guess, at our high school that we went around with a few of us faculty was, when do you call the millennium? 2001 or 2000?
Yeah.
I mean, you
have to people are going to celebrate, yeah.
Which one are you going to celebrate?
The whole year. Why not?
Both. The whole
year. I mean, this millennium started in 2001.
Well, I remember when we, it was a time of life in 1950, they decided, they were, and they were quite right, some people said that the second half of the 20th century begins in 1951. And Time's answer to that was yes, but 1950 feels like the beginning. You know? And the problem there is, remember some of you who, you know, in grade school, you had those big black slates up there and the numbering started, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and it always started with 1, it didn't start with 0.
Right.
And the number, so we're always getting used to the fact that, you know, that it should start with 1 starts the sequence, but it is 0.
Right?
If it started with 0, then that's where it would be. But it just feels like this. And some people will say, you're just playing, you know, they would say, you're playing head games.
Yeah.
It's what you're doing in cutesy little things. And when the Lord says, vengeance is mine, God's coming back.
That's the same thing. They got the computers confused. They don't know how to program 2000.
Yeah,
I know that. But they. I've heard that that's basically under control by now.
Yeah.
I heard that because there was a huge story, a lead story on in Newsweek or something about this early this spring about that. But I've heard that's basically, except for old antiquated ones like mine, apparently.
Yeah.
It's going to go smash or blow up or something. I don't.
From the NIST computer programmer for PEMCO and. Seattle says it is still
iffy.
Well, the problem again is that you're starting to getting insurance policy things going out into the year beyond 2000 already, and you've got to get ready for, you know, it's just sort of.
Well, maybe it's a big bluff. What's his name? Paul Allen? Is that
the big guy
in Seattle?
Well,
the bucks, but he's probably got a new product ready that he isn't going to spin on the market. And then he can buy 3-4 more sports teams with a new Windows 2000 instead of the Windows 95.
That's me. But Paul Allen will be the one to have a little company that's got that little secret.
Right.
Okay.
Well, for those of you who weren't here last week, we had the signing of the lease for Holden Village with the Forest Service. How does that go? We have the lease, it's good till the year 2002.
Yes.
The present lease till 2002, and then another 20 years after that. So we're already, Holden is already operating into
Interesting, they wanted to sign the lease 4 years before the other one expires.
Yes.
I'm sure you
Oh, I see, which is big. In case you don't have this case.
It hasn't run out yet, but we've already got the next
one. It runs out for 2002, but they signed the one for 20 years beyond it, normally.
Did the budget balance was in 2004 or something? I mean, we've already got those things.
It just seems like the year 2000 is so bold and so dramatic. This isn't 100 years, you know, big deal, 100 years. But the 1,000, I mean, you stop to think of that. There's just all sorts of implications for that. And I think a lot of people are, you know, buying into that.
Well, if the geologists seem to, you know, the document that the Earth is probably millions of years old, then that 1,000 years, that's not believable.
No, but we're not, you know, they would say we're... We only get our four, what is it, 3 score and 10 or 4 score and 10 and so on. And so we have to make the most of the, you know, the hundreds that we have.
That's right.
At this point. And we're not going to live into millions of years.
On this earth.
On this earth, yeah.
Like Elmer says, when you reach a certain decade, you start, we're in the same decade, you think about, you know, each day is a gift. You live it by grace and, you know, you leave it to God. So.
Okay. Did you want to say?
One day at a time. All we should take is one day at a time and live it the best we can.
That's that song. She's in fact from Northfield. What's her name? The Western singer, One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus. That's all I'm asking from you.
Marilyn
Sellers. Yeah. She comes back and sings it every year in Northfield. And anyway, I think there's, am I the only one here? I'm not just being the devil's advocate, but there's something going on here. I really think, maybe it's in the minds of people, but maybe that some people need something more bold and dramatic than this, but it just seems like something big is going to happen.
Well, even if all the people saw that something big is going to happen, it's the same that God's going to make it happen.
No, but but you're what we call a nominalist in philosophy, but that's all right. That's a good name you have. I don't want to be the only one here. I'm hoping somebody... Do we have a premillennialist in the crowd?
Yeah.
Want to define that again?
A premillennialist?
Yeah.
Those who believe taking Revelations 20:1-6,
okay,
that the first battle will be Jesus against the forces of Satan for 7 years. And Satan will be defeated, cast into captivity. Jesus will reign on earth bodily for 1,000 years. And in a way, time will freeze, and then there will be Jesus. Satan will be unloosed once again, and there will be one final battle. And it'll happen on the plains of Megiddo. I don't know if any of you have been on the plains of Megiddo and on this. And what's happening now? They've turned that into a theme park. they're ready for the Battle of Megiddo with us. But some people argue that since these are the promises that are in the New Testament, we should honor those. Give you an example why this is so connected with what we would call Israel. They really believe, for instance, that when Israel became a political state, right after World War II, this was not just the act of the United States, this was not just the act of the United Nations. But God was directly intervening in history, because Jesus would not come back again until the Jews had returned to the homeland. That's an Old Testament prophecy, and that therefore, that's why the evangelical community, Billy Graham believes this, firmly, and the whole group, Wheaton College and Christianity Today, and all these people believe it. They believe that that is an act of God, that's why it took place, and that's why they're so willing to support the state of Israel, and that God does intervene directly in history. In ways like that, we just haven't been willing to acknowledge this. And why, you could argue the other hand, why wouldn't it? Okay, maybe I need a little more on premillennialism here.
Why do you take that particular passage so literally?
It's canonical.
Oh, I know what it says. But right. I mean, why do you take 7 years, for example? Is that 7 days, 365 days times seven?
Basically that's.
Yeah, I mean, but we have looked at interpretations of numbers, and apply that in other parts of the Bible, very very nicely, so that we don't have to look at 7 years being 7 days.
Let me try another one. What is it? Who knows the name of C.I. Schofield? Schofield dispensationalism, two people. Okay, so I know what you know.
Bible.
What?
The world was created on Friday afternoon, October 13th, 4 B.C.
Yeah, this
that's
is not.
The
this
same
is not.
Schofield. That's a different Schofield.
This is no. This is a. That's Bishop Usher.
Yeah.
That's Bishop
Schofield
Usher.
Right? That's
Bishop
Bible.
Usher. Yeah. That there have been seven ages in the history of humankind. Mm-hmm. And that we've lived through six of these, that God acts differently in each dispensation or in each age. And this caught on in the 19th century in a really big way. I remember I do a lot of research at Wheaton College in the Billy Graham Library, and I have some friends there, and I always like to try out some ideas in the Wheaton undergraduate classes. And I try out C.I. Schofield up at St. Olaf, and who's this? Is that a rock group or something? They don't know what C.I. Schofield is. But I say C.I. Schofield down at Wheaton, and they all know that we are now in the sixth of the seven dispensations, and that you can trace these, and they are literally to be found in the Bible, and that therefore we can come. The problem is obviously that it's Schofield who's done this, more than we would say somebody from the first 11, the apostles or something like that. But the Schofield thing has become very, very popular, and it's a way, I think, if they use a psychological interpretation, it's a way of people thinking, yes, it looks like Satan's winning now, but by golly, you'll get yours, when the time comes, that maybe the sun and the rain will fall on it, or shine on the just and the unjust now, but there will be a coming time when all this will be done away. and that the righteous will triumph, and that therefore they should look forward to this. And if it takes something as dramatic as the year 2000 to do it, that's what's going to happen. And that's, it's fulfilling, I think, a, you know, in that way, a psychological need for those who say, you know, why should the unjust seem to succeed? And if you look at, you know, the world, you know, in some of the ways that I've been suggesting here before, you would think maybe it's time for God to come in and intervene. How much, you know, how much farther can things go in the back there?
The people have been predicting the end for centuries.
Right. Yep.
And using basically books like Revelation,
Daniel.
Yep. And a few other portions here and there. One of the interesting things about those who predict the end is that I've never known anyone to predict the end to happen 500 years from now. Everybody who goes through the computations, regardless of when they did it, they always predict the end to come very soon.
Right.
Okay, it's never somewhere in the distant future.
Right.
Okay, well, for some of those first predictions, we're in the distant future, and we're still here. And to me, that's a total misuse of the book of Revelation, or Daniel, or any of those books to try to somehow or other pinpoint a date that Jesus himself says we can't do. And so, what's the year 2000? Like somebody said, we're probably, if the calendar is based on the birth of Christ, we're probably already into it. You know, it's because that happened a couple years ago. It's I just can't get excited about it. Premillennialism, post-millennialism,
or any of
that.
Be prepared for the thief in the night, though.
Yes.
Well, I think this is just one more way where people they're going to get, so I can have. Be the one that's in the know, the power struggle, the greed, and all the sin. One more thing. We don't know when it's going to be, and what difference does it make? It's just that death is merely a transition in a way. Some people want to have to have something over somebody else. I know what it's going to be. That being, I don't see that Scripture says that.
Well, that goes way, way back. Wasn't it the Egyptian priests who understood astronomy and they understood eclipses and things like this, would use the power of the eclipse to convince the people they understood all these things. And so, yeah, I see that. I'm a little suspicious of the power thing.
I'm suspicious of the commercial interest too, because making jackets and t-shirts and things like that for kids who are going to graduate in 2000, I mean, that's a big deal right now. 2000
really?
Special things. Can you see all the ideas that are popping up on how you can commercialize on selling things that have something to do with 2000, whether it's for partying or what? I mean, big things happening commercially.
I decided I'm going to have a dinner party on the night of December 31st and watch the ball go down at Times Square, you know, and then, you know, remember, like it always happens, and then go to bed and not do dishes.
just
let that big RCA Whirlpool guy up there, you know, do my dishes for me.
But he's after Elmer's popcorn.
Oh, really?
Well, you got a mouse in here, is that?
Yeah. Are they going to invite us to a party?
Sure, why not? You know, I won't need money anymore, so. Sure, okay.
Is there anything recorded in history that you know of when the year 1000 occurred?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, and you'll be reading more about that now. I have a piece. There was some panic at that time that something drastic was going to take place.
I remember.
Yeah, and quite a bit, and because that was, but I can't give any more details on that. But there was such poor communication in those times that only a few people even knew they even lived by a calendar at all. And now with an internet, for instance, we have instant communication everywhere.
But early, when that ball falls in New York, if you're in Minnesota,
right?
You
time for news.
Yeah, time for news, right? Time for a commercial.
You know these people then that are going predicting it's going to take place then? Is it going to be a gradual thing, 1 hour in time zones? In other words, if you could be in the time zones farther away, you're going to last longer.
Well, they haven't worked out all the details yet. How's that?
There isn't any more far fixes on it, so far as I'm concerned.
Other comments?
Sure. I have a question for you.
Sure.
You seem to be the only one. Will you live each day for what it is, or will you live anxiously awaiting what may happen in the year 2000?
I'll take a fearless, middle-of-the-road compromise stand and say I'll go both ways. Uncompromising stand for compromise here on that. I'm glad I'm 66. I'm glad I'm alive. And I mean, seriously, and you know, I see my high school and college graduate last classes, and when they hand out the bulletin, they call it necrology. And yes. that gets my attention, you know, those who aren't going to be at the next class reunion.
Right.
And I was about as popular, it was our class reunion last year, and I said, I'll see all of you, you know, in 5 years. And they didn't want to hear that. No. They knew what I meant, right? So, you know, both. You have to anticipate that there's going to be something, you know, down the line. Be ready. In that great getting up morning, you know, you have to be ready for that. But, you know, you try to live each day too. It's both, you know. If sometimes the daily life is so dull that I figure there has to be something better than this. And then other times, I'm glad I'm able to enjoy a daily, you know, the dull, as long as it well as it good. You can't, you know, my friend Emily, she says, you can't have the hallelujah chorus all the time. And I think that's the way I would put it too. You can't have that all the time, that as much as you would like to. Because if you had it all the time, it wouldn't mean anything anymore. There has to be the rhythms up and down, right? I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody. I gave that chapel talk about 10 times at St. Olaf, and I never was asked to give it again, but... yeah.
Well, that's another thing about the forum. If we run out of stuff to say, we'll do that.
Well, I've got one more. I have to tell the one joke. With the premillennialists, my first book is, happily, you can look at it, it's right over there in the library, but I did it on this, and I was up at a conference at Bethel College in St. Paul, which is evangelical, and the other speaker was Martin Marty, you know, number one Lutheran in the country with his own Book of the Month Club and those jokes and so on. And anyway, we were, it was in the fall, and we were lunch hour, and we went off to look around, and it was, they also have Bethel Seminary right by the college, and we saw that they had a touch football league. And it seemed like a nice diversion in the fall for people to get out on Saturday afternoon and play, you know, play touch football. Okay, fine. So we looked further and we found out there were four teams in the touch football league. And that I have to explain some things here about what this means. There are three positions on what they call the rapture. When Jesus comes, there is a teaching that says that the saints will be lifted or raptured up into heaven, so they won't have to put up with this before the rapture comes. And then say others will say they're halfway through, 3.5 years through, the saints will be raptured or lifted up and be in heaven. And then others will say that there will be enough grace and protection so the saints will persevere and they won't be raptured until the end. And that, therefore, there are the three positions: the premillennial rapture, the mid-tribulation rapture, and the post-tribulation rapture. Okay, so and maybe you've seen pictures where they have people's bodies going up. And we had one fellow in our department, Joe Shaw. He always said when he got in an airplane, he always asked the pilot if he was pre-mid, you know, pre-trib, or he wanted to be sure he was going to get to his destination. But anyway, Marty and I were there, and we saw the sign up and the schedule for the touch football team. And we saw that the four teams were the pre-tribs, the mid-tribs, the post-tribs, and the Chicago tribs. That made the column the next week. That got the MOA, MEM column.